On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's just one of those mysteries, said Porter Goss on his quick hustle out as head of the CIA. But not that mysterious. Almost 5 years after 9/11, with war in Iraq and a nuclear threat in Iran, and threats were told all over, America's intelligence operations can seem to still be in a shambles, and nowhere more so than at the CIA. President Bush put Goss in charge less than 2 years ago. Morale plummeted. Veterans bailed out. Bush downgraded the whole agency. Now Air Force General Michael Hayden is in line for the job. He's a player. But one top Republican says wrong person, wrong place, wrong time. Up next on Point, upheaval at the CIA and the state of American intelligence. Joining me now from Washington is Michael Isikoff, investigative correspondent for Newsweek magazine and co-author of the weekly online web column TerrorWatch. Michael Isikoff, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
And with us from Washington is Tim Berger. He covers intelligence and terrorism for Time magazine. Tim Berger, good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be with you guys.
Michael Isikoff, first to you, if I may. Was Porter Goss sacked? Is that the right word?
Yeah, he was. It was clear that he had been clashing with John Negroponte and Michael Hayden, the director and deputy director of National Intelligence. It's kind of an irony because the intelligence community had been completely reorganized, and the office of Negroponte's office had been created in response to the recommendations of the September 11th Commission almost 2 years ago now, for the precise purpose of ending bureaucratic turf battles and ensuring a more efficient intelligence community, and one in which everybody was talking to each other. And what ended up happening here was that Negroponte and Goss, or Negroponte's office and Goss, were feuding over Negroponte's office's attempts to oversee and redirect deployment of intelligence community analysts, and also to probe and play a bigger role in operational matters inside the CIA. Goss and his team, including Dusty Fago, the number three, were resisting that. That created tensions between the CIA and Negroponte's office.
So out he goes. Tim Berger, what's the early word? We don't even know if he'll be confirmed by the Senate. There's early resistance there, but in the end, it is a Republican Senate with a Republican president. Is General, four-star Air Force General Michael Hayden in a position to heal wounds at the CIA? He opened up there in the Oval Office with conciliatory remarks today. Is he the kind of man, has he got the kind of background to get this agency back on its feet?
Well, he certainly is a lifelong intelligence professional. And he's got management experience for sure out at the NSA, which I believe is the largest intelligence agency. Neither of those things could really be a claim that Mr. Goss would have made. At the same time, as people are pointing out, he is a military officer. The deputy CIA director is a Navy admiral. And though both people have much respect in their own right, it is a civilian agency. So there's some concern there. By the way, I think some of the discontent on Capitol Hill from Republicans, which is slightly surprising, but, you know, good to see that they're sort of thinking on their own. But some of that is probably because they're friendly as well with Porter Goss and may be a little unhappy with him, basically, as Michael said, being sacked.
Michael Isikoff, what was Goss's style here? He had to deal with a complete reorganization that downgraded his whole agency not long after President Bush said he would be the man when it came to intelligence, but why did he create so much unhappiness inside the CIA?
Well, he was not a popular figure at the CIA at all. He was sort of disengaged. George Tenet, his predecessor, had been very much involved, was very much sort of, you know, would walk down the hallways, chat with people, approachable. Goss was sort of a distant director, said he didn't do personnel matters, brought in these congressional staffers from the Hill, the so-called Gosslings, who were young, inexperienced, and viewed as highly partisan. That did not go over well at all with the senior ranks of the CIA, to have partisan congressional staffers suddenly ordering things around. You had a great deal of resignations at the upper ranks attrition and what everybody described as demoralized workforce, and that did create all sorts of problems. Complaints about that got back to the White House, to Negroponte's office, and ultimately to the president.
And what is the scandal that's touched Dusty Fargo and maybe others here? Remind us of what's reaching out to him from all the scandal inquiries on Capitol Hill?
Right. This one grows out of the Duke Cunningham case, Duke Cunningham being the congressman from California who has pled guilty to accepting bribes from defense contractors. And as federal prosecutors and the FBI continue that investigation, they have come across allegations that one of the defense contractors at issue was providing through a limousine service prostitutes to Cunningham, at least, and perhaps others. All that is being probed. No specific allegations against Dusty Fargo, but he is definitely under investigation as part of that. He had ties to one of the defense contractors, long-standing relationships. He apparently may have been at poker parties that the contractor played with Cunningham. So with that kind of investigation out there, that again also got back to the White House and helped push the decision to oust Goss from Goss, although he has not been implicated, was protective of Fargo. He had elevated him. He was supporting him, so that hurt Goss.
Tim Berger, Portergas has been around a long time, spent 10 years himself in the CIA, but the timetable for this announcement, which showed up so suddenly Friday afternoon, as Time magazine, your magazine reports, was not what the White House wanted or expected.
Yeah, they had hoped to sort of, reach an agreement that he would leave one of these days, but give them some time to make a final decision on General Hayden, for example, go over things a little bit more with him and mm-hmm. about his background. But Mr. Goss said, hey, if we're going to do it, let's do it. So he, you know, in a way wanted to take a little bit more control of his own exit than they had sort of been offering him.
And off he goes. Michael Isikoff, how would you characterize the state of the CIA today? I guess first, remind us what happened structurally here to the CIA in the last couple of years, and then the state of the agency today.
Well, this position, director of the CIA, has actually been downgraded. It used to be more than just running the Central Intelligence Agency. You were director of Central Intelligence, which meant the entire intelligence community, including the NSA, including other arms of the U.S. intelligence community. All that is now in the hands of the Director of National Intelligence. So the office of
that is John Negroponte with his whole new structure.
Right, whole new structure. So this is in some ways a less significant position than it had been in the past. But you're still running the premier intelligence agency of the government. So it's still certainly an important one. But look, I think that everybody at the CIA, as in Capitol Hill, are going to be watching very closely these upcoming confirmations hearings of Michael Hayden. They are almost certainly going to be highly contentious. There are going to be lots of tough questions, the domestic eavesdropping is going to be front and center.
That was on his watch at the NSA.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Tim, what about the issue of the military uniform? He's active 4-star Air Force general, not known to be chummy with Don Rumsfeld, but the Pentagon has been reaching out and pulling in an awful lot of American intelligence activity. Is Congress seriously worried about the imagery here or the fact of greater and greater military oversight or role in American intelligence? How do they see the problem there?
That clearly is a good part of what some of the Republicans have been chafing about a little bit in over the weekend. But Mr. Hayden really has been quite independent of Rumsfeld. I'll tell you that. We had reported earlier that that he basically told Secretary Rumsfeld, "Hey, sorry, boss, I'm going to be testifying in favor of this new director of national intelligence law." That was August 2004, and Rumsfeld was not pleased about that, to say the least. And so he has gone up against him on some important things, but clearly as well, he's a military officer. And, again, to have the director and deputy director, although I'm not sure of Mr. Callan's plans, the deputy director, but to have them both in uniform could be an issue.
That is the current deputy director of the CIA, also a military man, at a time when the military's influence in this realm has expanded a lot. Michael Isikoff, I know we have to let you go. We're grateful to you for being with us. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Anytime.
Also joining us now from New York is Jack Devine. He was a 32-year veteran of the CIA, served as acting deputy director of operations, left the agency half a dozen years ago, currently president of the Arkin Group, a consulting firm based in New York. Jack Devine, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Judith Yaffe, 20-year CIA analyst, specialized in the Middle East, left a decade ago but has been watching. She's now a senior research fellow at the National Defense University in Washington. Judith, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Judith, first to you. You've said you've got something like a dysfunctional intelligence operation in the United States today. What do you mean exactly by that, and is the CIA the problem?
The CIA is part of the problem. It's not a problem in and of itself. Dysfunctional, I think, takes us back to the reforms and the people who've been appointed to implement those reforms, because some of that is what's at the heart of the Goss problem. In other words, his problem is not just his inability to lead within the agency and his contribution to problems that have been, that are there and were there before he came. Now, I think he certainly made things worse, my own view, but what I'm saying is that you have to look at different layers of the issue. The reforms that were put in, which created the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence,
John Negroponte, above the CIA,
right,
yeah,
really did not simplify or create clean lines as they were in theory supposed to do. Instead, it added additional layers of managers, of people trying to take charge of things, people trying to move other people around to grab resources, to grab turf. And none of that works very well in peacetime. And in a time of crisis such as we've been living through the past 4 to 5 years or more, it certainly isn't going to work well. So instead of streamlining things, as was recommended in the 9/11 report, and instead of creating better means for communication, I think it just complicated the matter further by creating additional barriers, more stovepiping, not less.
So structural change that hasn't fixed the problems. Jack Devine, here we are. We had 9/11. We saw the lapses in advance of that, obviously, the problems around intelligence going into the Iraq War. And this would seem to be a time for American intelligence to pull up its socks and do it right, not a time for turmoil. So are we on the right path here or not? Why so much upheaval?
I've never seen a time in history where the mission has been more critical. I mean, I think a lot of enterprises, whatever you're talking about, are tied to mission. At the end of the day, CIA and all the intelligence agencies have never had a more critical mission. The second thing is, do you have resources, people and money, pouring into those entities? And you could say, well, it's not just about money and people. That's absolutely correct. But where we were in the mid-90s and where we are today, so there is a lot. What I want to say is there's a lot going on, and the intelligence community is having considerable success abroad. The question and where we are today is we're really focusing about the Washington mechanism and how you structure it. And what we had, I guess, in the past year has been, you know, we had a CIA, and then we created a new entity. And I think it was just a matter of time before these two things had to be brought closer together. You either were going to make the CIA a very robust institution, or you were going to create a DNI, which the decision has been made. I mean, people can lament and wring their hands.
Mm-hmm.
The decision has been made, and the question is, how do you make it better? And I think you make it better by bringing those two institutions together. And I think now there's an opportunity to do that, and it's a question of style. And how. And I don't mean to minimize that. Style is terribly important on how that's handled, but there is an opportunity now. And I think Hayden may represent that opportunity.
Michael Hayden, said to be very strong on style, one of the best briefers in Washington when it comes to intelligence issues. He can mesmerize a group of White House officials or congressmen, very crisp in the way he handles that. But Tim Berger, there has been an exodus of senior CIA talent in recent years. Now, the CIA got a lot of the blame for 9/11. So is this exodus a good house cleaning, or is it a sign of a loss of confidence, loss of talent when we need it most?
I'm glad you asked that question, because indeed there have been a lot of retirements. Now, some of those folks were coming up on time to retire. You know, you can't work forever. They'd done good service and all that. Some of the people If you ask privately, people will say it was good that they went. But surely some of them were talented folks, and I'm sure Jack knows some of them. But, some of them were talented folks who had a lot more to offer. And, in the turmoil when Mr. Goss came on, though some of it was exaggerated, the perception, partially accurate, but the perception got out there that, Goss and his people were showing disregard for good career folks. And, they left, and that set a really negative tone for him. But, in part, the turmoil over there has also been because the DNI structure was put right on top of the CIA a few months after Goss came in. And so you were going to have an agency in trauma for that reason after 50 years at the top of the community, and that's after 9/11 and after Iraq. So you really have a tremendous time of seismic trauma and change over there. So it would have been hard for even the best, most directly experienced manager of intelligence to have come in and survived. Now Negroponte is going to have his own guy, and so it's all 100%, up to him to have it working to his satisfaction.
His own deputy, apparently, with a sign-off from Senate, if and when that comes, will be in charge at the CIA. Jack Devine, Judith Yaffe, Tim Berger, we've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. Let me begin to turn to them. Michael is calling from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Michael, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you. My question is both historical and contemporary. Mm-hmm. In light of the fact that polls, anyway, are indicating that the presidential support is low, somewhere in the low 30s for what the president is doing, I wonder if it's possible for us to have confidence in intelligence. And the idea being there that has there ever historically been a time when we could have confidence in the intelligence agencies when we did not have confidence in the administration?
That's a great question. Judith Yaffe, let me go first to you on that. And it gets back to this issue of morale. Morale may be low because everybody, in a sense, got downgraded at the CIA, but we've also heard these noises that intelligence wasn't being respected. It was being driven by a political agenda. President Bush not so popular now, and Michael asks, if you don't have a popular president, can you possibly have a popular intelligence arm?
I think you have to disassociate the issues. The Central Intelligence Agency works for the President of the United States. If you don't like what the agency is doing, you have to look to the person it works for. What is the mission as he defines it? What does he want them to do? Now, I think that morale in the agency, yes, has been damaged by the past couple of years and the impact of the Bush administration on them. Did they trust the agency or not? And I think that to a great extent there were clear indicators that they really weren't trusted because they didn't deliver the kinds of messages that the administration wanted. Now, you can have the best intelligence company in the world, and it doesn't matter. They can provide the most accurate intelligence, but if the administration doesn't want to listen to it, then it doesn't matter.
Are you saying that a political agenda was distorting the White House view of what they heard from the CIA? I mean, I guess the question is, were these good, wise, and plugged-in agents laboring away there at the CIA and ignored by the political leadership, or were they muffing it and Bush and company had to step in and try and fix it?
There is no question that there were some very serious intelligence failures. But you have to ask yourself why the failures, it was a lack of experience in the agency, or was it the fact that there was a very heavy push, what you've called politicization on many of your other programs, certainly out there, in other words, managers who would deliver what they knew what was required. I'm sure that there was some problem there. If you look at the WMD failure, for example, you have to ask yourself why it was so pervasive and so serious. But there were other battles as well, and I think the point is that the agency works for the president, and if you don't like what the policy is or what they're doing, you have to look to the source. But the second issue I want to raise is when you talk about intelligence provided to the president, that's not just the CIA. And part of your problem is if you have competing intelligence organizations created within the Pentagon because they want to produce something that they think is more accurate or more politically correct. You have a lot of advisors out there who contribute to this. So intelligence is a label which, when one thinks about it, must be the CIA, but it's not. And that's where one has to think carefully about the director designate, because all of the agencies in the community were involved in some way or other in terms of the failures, in terms of the problems to get the accurate information together at the right time. And yet you have to ask the question is, did the patch work?
Jack Devine, are we all stuck in the past giving the CIA so much attention now? If the Pentagon's really in charge of so much intelligence gathering, is the CIA kind of an afterthought? Does it matter so much anymore?
I think at the end of the day, the principal agency that's doing human collection, I mean, that's out there penetrating and bringing down al-Qaeda is the CIA. So let us not lose perspective on what's going on here. Since 9/11, if you look at what CIA has done, just in the public domain, you don't need secret information to establish this. First of all, the Taliban was brought down by a CIA operation. I mean, it was basically overthrown with the old Mujahideen war fighters.
They were right in the middle of that.
The second thing is, Tom, not to interrupt you, but I wanted to make the point that two-thirds of the leadership of al-Qaeda has been taken out. That doesn't happen by accident. So the question of the military is and the relationship with CIA is a critically important one. And I think Hayden actually provides an opportunity here to help bridge that. There's a tremendous requirement in Iraq for what I would call tactical information. And there is a role for the military. Now, taking over the CIA, I mean, I think this has been blown tremendously out of proportion. In terms of running agents for strategic collection, that's still pretty much the domain of the CIA. I think everybody recognizes that, both in the committees, in the White House, and both parties. The only point that I wanted to add, And I think it's important. You know, it's one thing to focus on the executive, but one of the things that I think we're wandering away from, and it's coming home to roost for us, we really need to get back to a bipartisan approach to intelligence. And I think we need, and I've seen this over and over again, where we've had it, you've had robust and healthy intelligence. When both parties are looking at it as an opportunity for fighting and disputing and using information and even the candidacy of candidates, I think we get into a really difficult time. And I think we need to get congressmen as well as executives thinking about what's good for the country, what's good for intelligence, and leave the political agendas at home.
Well, maybe, but then you've got a White House, and they're in charge, who appeared to bring a lot of politics right into intelligence in the run-up to the Iraq War. Tim Berger,
Tom, I just wanted to put a note. This is not a single-party issue. It's both parties.
Well, it's certainly highly partisan now, but there's some history to that. Tim, how do you read the low morale in the CIA if, as Jack Devine says, they're running the agents in the field, and, of course, that's their job, but if this outfit has such low morale and they're so important, something's really wrong here?
Well, yeah, something obviously is wrong, but, in a sense, I'm sure that as the Berlin Wall fell, there was high morale. I'm sure that after Iraq War I, there was high morale. But basically, it's an agency that its whole job is to deal with problems and hard problems. And the business Jack was in of human spying is extremely difficult, and aspects of it are extremely risky. So I would love to hear from Jack on how often there's really high morale. In fact, if you look at a lot of American companies, just average companies, you read the comic strip Dilbert, how many people just love what they do every day? So morale, can be overstated. But clearly, morale has been particularly pummeled lately. Again, you had Iraq, you had 9/11, then you have this reform where the CIA is dethroned, and then you have a director who came in and was viewed as, as Isikoff was saying before, unfavorably by the some of the people who were putting out stories. So it's very important to fix it, but I don't know. It's hard to get a real handle on what that means.
Jack Devine, was it ever thus? Is the CIA always had morale at this level? I mean, the stories we're hearing sound like this is something unusual, but you tell us.
Well, I think it's divided into pieces. I mean, I think like any business, where you're engaged, where you're relevant, morale is high. And I would suspect today those working on the terroristic accounts, morale is high. Then you get into the Washington, again, environment, and, besieged every day. There's a great deal of uncertainty about the future and where you're going, and people do spend time on it. Having said that, the recruitment of people wanting to join the CIA is very high. And I think, as Tom was saying, that, you know, you have constant periods of turmoil, and the place is used to dealing with these crises. This may be one of the more difficult periods because you have the transition not only from the end of the Cold War, but some significant failures, and finally reorganization. You bring those things together, and you have that uncertainty thing. But in the core, that isn't what's going to stop or destroy the agency from moving forward. And I think, not that it's easy to remedy, but I think with the right leadership, and as I said, a more non-politicized environment, I think the prospects are tremendous because of the resources, and the basic mission is there. So, you know, again, I'm optimistic. I would invest in CIA, and I invest in the intelligence community.
If it were a stock, you'd be there. Judith Yaffe, we've got the Republican, Peter Hoekstra, in the House side, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, saying, wrong person, wrong place, wrong time on Michael Hayden. There's a GOP criticism. Why so much sensitivity to the uniform here?
Well, in part because, I don't know, quite frankly, that you could say it's because, you know, there are military personnel in charge of all the intelligence organizations, but I wouldn't say that. I wanted to come back to something that Jack pointed out, which is the morale issue. I was very fortunate to work at a time when the morale was extremely high, and especially around the 90, 91, 92 period when the Kuwait War was on. And I think people knew what their mission was, and there was respect for it and appreciation, and it wasn't politicized.
Judith, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And right now from Washington, Charles Babington, congressional reporter for The Washington Post. Charles Babington, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So here we've seen pushback over the weekend from Republicans in the House side. Peter Hoekstra, representative from Michigan, chairman of House Intelligence Committee. He is the wrong person, the wrong place, the wrong time, he says, of General Hayden. Now the announcement is official. How much resistance is this nomination going to get on its way through?
I think it was a little surprising, some of the comments that were made over the weekend. The first thing to keep in mind, of course, is that it's the Senate and not the House that confirms or denies confirmation to these types of appointees. So Peter Hoekstra certainly is an important player, but he doesn't have a vote. And I think obviously the White House is much more concerned about the Senate Intelligence Committee. That's the committee that will have the hearings and that will make a recommendation to the full committee to the full Senate, rather, of whether to confirm him. And the chairman of that committee is Pat Roberts of Kansas, who really has been quite supportive of the NSA surveillance program that seems to be at the heart of so much of this discussion, and for the most part has been very supportive of the administration in general. So I think he is the key player to watch at this point, and then the other committee members of that committee as well.
Senator Roberts conceded over the weekend that there is real concern in the Senate about a military officer leading the agency. Georgia Republican Saxby Chambliss saying something quite similar. Why the concern about the uniform on Michael Hayden here? Why so much concern, apparently, on Capitol Hill, Chuck?
You know, it's, Tom, I got to say, it's a bit of a mystery, in part because even though there was unhappiness, you know, people knew that Porter Goss was not in great standing, so I don't think it's a shock that he stepped aside. I had not at least heard, you know, the next step speculation about who the next person might be and whether or not that should be a military person. I think maybe it's even caught the White House somewhat by surprise. I am a little taken aback that the White House, you know, apparently throughout, you know, even starting Friday at least, had in mind the appointment of Michael Hayden, and then had not at least, smooth things over with the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Peter Hoekstra, to the point that he would go on the Sunday talk show and, you know, and make the type of statement that he did. They would have wanted him to make something, you know, certainly much more supportive than that. So I'm wondering if this issue of military versus non-military person, because of course there is precedent for having military people head the CIA.
Stansfield, Turner, and others.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it has caught some people, including myself, somewhat by surprise. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the next few days and weeks.
Tim Berger, how do you read that? Is this political positioning by congressmen worried that the president's just not popular right now, so they want to put some distance between themselves and him? Is there a real concern that the Pentagon's influence in intelligence has grown too large, and whatever Hayden says, he's got the uniform on?
I think it's a little bit of a combination of things, and in a way that probably is a simplified proxy issue to cover a bunch of concerns that people may have. Again, Hayden, very experienced in intelligence. Apparently, he's quite the PowerPoint ninja in briefings.
PowerPoint ninja, okay.
Yeah, anyone who works 30 years in any field, though, will not have a perfect record. And when he was out at NSA, there was over $1 billion program that came to naught. It was a technology program, and it basically was audited and viewed as recently as being almost worthless. You did have questions about how cutting edge was NSA as far as information sharing. There are people who say that it was as tough as any in terms of holding its information close. So for all the accolades that Mr. Hayden gets, and for as sharp as he is, there's still, you know, some people who may have reservations. And if the CIA is a troubled institution now, and you ask some of its greatest fans, and they say it is, you know, some people want to, I probably put a shot across the bow to make sure that everyone's on notice that this doesn't just sail through.
Let's take a call from Rockville, Maryland. Brian is on the line. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi. Great show. Thanks for having it.
Thank you.
My question is kind of a larger question about the nature of intelligence and who should be doing it, and it's specifically about the balance between the CIA and the Department of Defense. And it's sort of who's best suited to do it, because the Department of Defense, I mean, their modus operandi is kind of maximum force, you know, kick down the front door and shoot people up, whereas the modus operandi of the CIA is clandestine, you know, kind of sneak in the back door, if you will. And I'm just wondering about this sort of post 9/11 world that we're living in and the need for intelligence gathering, especially this issue of radical Islamism. You know, we really have a need for very subtle, long-term intelligence gathering. I mean, this war is going to be fought not in Iraq, but in the back alleys of Karachi, Jakarta, et cetera. And it seems to me the CIA is really best suited to do that. And also, the example of Iraq, to me, is very, very worrying, because essentially Cheney, Libby, Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld got together and Doug Feith. They didn't like the intelligence they were getting from the CIA saying, well, there are not really any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. There's no link to Al-Qaeda, et cetera, et cetera. And so they set up their own intelligence shop to skew the – I think they skewed the intelligence to get the answer they wanted so they could invade Iraq.
And in we went, and that leaves people really sensitive looking at it now. Brian, let us pick that up. Jack Devine, how about it on the division of labor here? There might have been a time when Americans would say – you know, you guys work it out, but we went into Iraq and there were no weapons. People's antenna are up now. They're a little suspicious of what's going on here. What about the division of labor between the Department of Defense and the CIA? Is it the right division or not? How do you see it?
No, I think the problem is going to be worked and has to be worked over the next decade. This is not a new problem. I think certainly after the first Iraq war, there were issues about, was the intelligence community providing the type of support that the military needed and desired? And I think there was a reshuffling both inside of CIA and how they approached that, as well as the military. But I think I need to make clear is that there's an awful lot of tactical information, you know, what bridge is where and how many gallons of oil are being pumped down this line. There's a lot of tactical information that is needed, particularly in a war setting.
And that's
military,
still coming that's from what, the CIA or not?
That's what the military should
okay.
be doing.
Mm-hmm.
The CIA should be trying to penetrate the decision-making mechanism of the target group, the terrorist. The logistical support, who's in charge, what are their decisions, what are their plans, intentions. That's the strategic piece. Now, in this complicated and high technical world we live in today, there's an overlap in different places, and that's why I think it's very important to have a really strong interface between the military and the civilian branches. One of the traditions, which a lot of the critics seem to have forgotten, the tradition of CIA has been to almost always have the top or the second person as a military person.
As it is today.
It's been recognized mm-hmm. the need to have a senior general or admiral in that front office suite so they could deal with defense, understood all the issues. So I think the anomaly now is we have two, and I think that's going to be remedied fairly quick.
Charles Babington, let me turn to you there. Midterm elections coming up, Republicans fearing for some of their seats. the sense in Washington and beyond that some of the analysis may have been skewed in the run-up to war with Iraq. Is that part of why they're trying, some congresspeople, trying to put space between themselves and the president here? That they, is it possible to expect a CIA director who's going to be independent-minded when it comes to analyzing what's really going on in the world?
Well, clearly the president's problems and low poll numbers are affecting Republicans. You're seeing Republicans put distance between themselves and him on any number of issues now, and I think this is perhaps one of those areas. At the same time, for the most part, Republicans seem to welcome this overall debate about they generally feel that when you talk about security in the broadest terms, that Republicans still come out ahead of Democrats in most voters' minds, and particularly on this question of the NSA surveillance program that, again, will be very much at the heart of a lot of the debate over Michael Hayden. The feeling is that whenever this debate comes up, that Democrats who criticize it are seen as not wishing to listen in on conversations of terrorists, where the Republicans are supporting that. Now, of course, the issue is more complicated than that. There, you know, the whole question really is largely, why was the administration not seeking warrants to do these eavesdropping? Because there is the whole mechanism that's been in place for some time to have warrants. I think the Democrats have not done a particularly good job of articulating that argument and sharpening that argument, and to the degree that they have not done a good job on that, the Republicans are probably right in thinking that just from a purely political standpoint, the more this debate comes forward, probably the better off they are, and it gets, you know, and it takes, you know, the issue of the discussion away from some of the other issues, specifically Iraq on point. But
you've got Pennsylvania's Republican Arlen Specter saying he would use a Hayden nomination as a moment to try and pry open more conversation about what's going on with that NSA eavesdropping that Hayden was in charge of.
Right, and the remarkable thing is that of the 54 other Republican senators, none has said it that it nearly as sharply as Arlen Specter, and only a handful, Lindsey Graham being one of them, have even, you know, in any small way sort of supported that point of view. So Specter, even though he's a powerful position because he chairs the Judiciary Committee, is really almost a lone voice in the Republican Party on that point.
Maybe on his own hook there. Charles Babington at the Washington Post. Charles, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Lou is calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Lou, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, Tom. I guess I just wanted to say I just feel that in terms of a bureaucracy, that's what's bogging the CIA down. I mean, you got to put some teeth back into it. Whether you put a military man in charge of the CIA or a longtime bureaucratic professional, the CIA is too bogged down with the bureaucracy. Post 9/11, you've got Homeland Security and you've got the National Director of Intelligence headed up by Negroponte. That's too much bureaucracy. There's just no teeth. There's gazillions of dollars here, and the CIA is still going to be inept.
So you're not necessarily sleeping comfortable yet tonight. Tim Berger, what about it? We have this sense it is almost 5 years now since 9/11, and yet you don't get a kind of, you know, spit polish all zipped up sense out of the CIA. It's never been an easy agency to run. But should the country be able to expect more in this particular time? President Bush himself saying this morning this is the most dangerous kind of time. Is it reasonable to have this much upheaval? Is this part and parcel of reform, or is this, you know, a mess?
Well, it certainly is suboptimal, but it's a bit of a mess, but it probably is inevitable in the course of reform. A lot of people are saying that this has been a demonstration that the new DNI structure isn't the right one. Of course, it's a little early to weigh in on that, considering Negroponte's been in office just over a year. But some people are saying that they seem to be heading back toward the old model where the CIA director was in charge of everything, or, you know, or else you would have the CIA director as the deputy directly to some sort of director of Central Intelligence or DNI. But yes, the, you know, reform is always a messy process. Look at the Department of Homeland Security, you know, but in the intelligence world, which is sort of a difficult business to begin with, when these things are come out, it, you know, I'm sure I don't blame some of the listeners for saying that they it doesn't inspire the greatest confidence.
The Department of Homeland Security and then FEMA and now this, it doesn't look like necessarily the best models there. Rick is calling from Orleans, Massachusetts. Hi, Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're well. What do you think, Rick?
Well, I think that if we look historically at what's been going on since George Bush took office, it seems to me that one should be questioning whether or not this is sort of a manipulation to circumvent a lot of the constitutional process that allows us to carry on intelligence both domestically and abroad. And you bring in a person like Porter Goss. If you looked at a normal commercial industry, you might bring in somebody to clear house. And so they bring in Porter Goss temporarily, knowing that people are going to leave, knowing that you're going to be changing the whole attitude of an agency. And then you bring in somebody who has proven that he will do whatever you want him to do to circumvent the process.
And you see Michael Hayden in those terms.
Yes, so they bring in Michael Hayden, who knowingly seems to have circumvented the constitutional process because he's loyal to the commander-in-chief.
Of course, he's fiercely defended that warrant-free wiretapping. But Jack Devine, how about it? An attitude adjustment seemed to have been desired by the White House at the CIA. Did Porter Goss pull that off? Is the attitude adjustment phase complete here?
I think as Tim was saying, you're looking at major change and transition, and there's no way that was going to happen without turmoil. The important thing, I think, for the new leadership is to try and minimize the amount of turmoil, and I think the setting is right for that. The other thing that was sitting there is you have the CIA, and again, your callers are saying the new bureaucracy, the DNI. As long as you had two independent, free-floating mechanisms, you were going to have problems. And at the end of the day, the way I look at this recent development isn't so much at all from a conspiratorial point of view, mm-hmm. but rather this is an attempt to, I think, consolidate. And I think this is where you're going to end up. And whether you started out making a very strong CIA, or whether you end up making the DNI, the CIA, one way or the other, you needed to consolidate it.
And now you've got Negroponte's deputy, Hayden, right, headed for the CIA top chair, and so maybe the amalgamation is done with that.
That is what I see, personally, as a first step, and I think it is an orderly step. And the right type of person to have orchestrating that is somebody who's had a considerable amount of experience in the intelligence world, in the community, and in organizational work, because this is, in many ways, is a management task. I mean, a real manager who can pull together all these diverse interests and put it together in a united view. Now, identity problems will be, and I think Tim had his finger on this, I mean, people are going to have trouble identifying exactly who I am, what organization, and we're going to have unrest because of that. But I think this is a step in the right direction. My experience in CIA, and I don't want to monopolize this part of it, but the people inside want to be loved and want to love their leader. I mean, their first position with Hayden, whomever they come up, will want to be successful. And I think every director has an opportunity when he comes in to take advantage of that. And how those first few steps and how the new director surrounds himself, who surrounds himself with, and the types of policies that he sets will be really set in motion for a long time, whether or not you can, whether you're going to have turmoil continuing or you could begin the healing.
Well, it is
effectiveness, I should add that. It's not just a question about the CIA feeling good. It has to be working in an optimum way.
We are all for that. It's a fascinating glimpse under the covers here. A little unsettling, but you provide a hopeful note there. Jack Devine, 32-year veteran of the CIA, now president at the Arkin Group. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Devine.
Thank you.
And Tim Berger, covering intelligence and terrorism for Time Magazine. Tim, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Anytime.
This is On Point.